Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and Rational Radio 1360 AM, Dallas, Texas. As you're listening to me today, I am in Dallas, Texas. We had a very long day of protests in front of George Bush's house in Dallas, a Rational Radio forum that was very successful. I hope you got a chance to attend. I'll be in Dallas for the next few days. And after I leave Dallas, I'll be going to Pittsburgh for the G20 protest, and you know that the leaders of those economies are just getting together to see how they can further stick it to we the people. For more information about the G20 protest, you can go to resistg20.org, resistg20.org. It's a very busy fall of protests. We'll be going to protest the wars in front of the White House on October 5th, and we just really need to get everybody out on the streets to protest, not just what our subject is today, the health care for profit or death care, as Ralph Nader calls it, but we're going to protest the illegal and immoral wars. We want Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Cindy Sheehan, I advocate for single-payer health care, but we're not going to get it while we're spending trillions of dollars a year, literally, on our military-industrial complex. So my guest today, we're having her back. She was on February 15th, 2009. She's Donna Smith, and we're going to be talking about health care. So please stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be talking to Donna Smith. This is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehanSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehanSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or Rational Radio 1360 AM, Dallas, Texas. My guest today is Donna Smith. Donna was in my friend Michael Moore's movie Sicko. She's a legislative person for the California Nurses Association. She's National Director of Progressive Democrats of America's Healthcare, Not Warfare campaign. Donna, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you so much.
Well, you were on back in February 15, 2009, and the health care debate hadn't really even started in the government, but of course we've been having this debate for a long time, and oh my gosh, in the last 6 months, six, 7 months, things have really gotten crazy out there, haven't they?
Oh, they certainly have. It's been just amazing to watch the political capital that's been wasted, actually.
Well, we're both, both of us are single-payer, universal single-payer health care advocates, and there's been just so much It's just so much to talk about in 26 minutes. I don't even know where to start. Well, today or yesterday, the Baucus bill was, you know, Senator Max Baucus, who's working on it on the Senate side of Congress, introduced his bill. Let's start there. Tell me what you think about that.
That's a great place to start and end, probably, in many ways.
I think so, because there's so many myths out there about what we want, single payer health care, like it's socialized medicine, that, you know, if we had single payer, then it would, you know, our grandmas would die or there'd be death panels or something like that. And we know that that's ridiculous. But I want to talk to you because you really are an expert on this issue, and maybe you can help me and my listeners understand what our government is actually proposing, which I'm not satisfied with at all either.
No, and nor should any of us be satisfied with where they're at right at the moment. Senator Baucus has released what his committee will offer as a solution for health care reform, and it really is quite inadequate in that it has no provision really to improve the situation very much for Americans, and could indeed make it much worse in my estimation. If the Finance Committee's plan, which would be to mandate that everyone purchase insurance, that's a big bonanza and bailout for the private health insurance industry. I see it as not much more than that.
Exactly.
Were to go through, there would be absolutely no public option coming out of the Senate Finance Committee whatsoever. There would be taxation of benefits at some level, and it's just not a way to grant the human right of health care to every person in this country. It's just not the way to get there. And so you've got that plan in his committee that even some Democrats in his committee are objecting to. So if there's any hope in that, it's that it may not garner support even in his own committee from all the members of his own party to deal with that. In the Senate, our bright light really is and has been and will be maybe for the next few months is Senator Bernie Sanders, who has remained a steadfast advocate of single-payer reform and intends to offer his bill, Senate Bill 703, on the floor of the Senate when they get busy debating, which could be sometime in the next few weeks. We'll see. We'll see. It probably will be sometime in the next few weeks, but that's really what's going on in the Senate. The Help Committee that Senator Kennedy was head of before his death already had released its own bill sometime prior to this. So those are the two committees of jurisdiction in the Senate deal with health care.
Is the Baucus bill, from what I understand, and I have been just like crazy. I mean, I'm always busy, but like the last 2 weeks I've been insanely busy. So I'm glad to have you on because this is a topic that I really care about, but I haven't been able to delve too deeply into it. Is that does he have a provision in there that would create a health insurance pool?
Not really. Not really. They do some talks about co-ops and so forth, although there aren't very many of us who think the co-op plans would essentially save any money or really make much of a difference in terms of people being able to get a progressively financed single standard of high-quality health care in this country, which is what we're really all about. And that's so disappointing. You know, when we think of our Congress, and I know, Cindy, you've done so much work in so many areas and know as well as anybody in our nation about the Congress and its dealings, and We like to think our founders envisioned the Senate as the contemplative body, you know, the place where they wouldn't be so prone to the whims and the waves of change, so and be able to have a little bit more time to consider and to think what's best for the nation and best for its people. And it has, as we know, evolved into something of a good old boys and a few good old girls club that get an awful lot of money from special interests, and in particular big insurance and big pharma.
On the first quarter of this year, HMOs, health insurance companies, and big pharma spent $126 million in Congress. Mm-hmm. Do the California Nurses Association have that kind of money?
No, but we have a voice that's as loud as you can imagine.
Do the Democrats of America have that kind of money?
No, absolutely not. We have to rely on our activists and our nurses and our doctors and people who are fighting with us to make enough noise. And that's why we had the extraordinary situation this spring that I know your listeners likely knew about, that we had. First, we had a group of eight people arrested in Senator Baucus's committee standing up and simply asking that single payer be included in the witness list, for God's sakes. He had 43 witnesses and not one, not one represented a single payer position. You know, I described it to political people I know of what an inelegant political strategy, even if you were going to dismiss the idea later on, a smart political strategist might have gone ahead and had a witness or two and heard people out and gone ahead to go on their own agenda. And I just thought from the word go, it was a terrible way to handle things. We, of course, had nurses who were arrested in the second group, so so we had lots of folks who were putting a lot on the line to make sure that single payer at least was elevated to the discussion level.
And I had Kevin Zeese on, who is the national director of Voters for Peace, and he's one of the ones that was arrested the first time.
He was terrific.
Yeah, no, Kevin Zeese is great. But let's go back to the Baucus debacle. You say that it's going to require every American to buy health insurance.
Yep.
And that there will be some kind of tax. Is it a tax rebate? Is it a tax, is it taken off the amount of taxes you're going to owe? Or do you know the specifics of that? Because many people participate in the Cash for Clunkers program, and they got $4,500 and then found out later it was going to be taxed.
Yeah.
So do you
that's
understand?
Kind of a similar, I think that's kind of a similar envisioning of this plan, is that, you know, you'll be able to, you're going to get these benefits, but you're also going to end up later on having to pay some level of taxation on those benefits. And I think that's very frustrating for people. You know, if we recall back to President Obama's campaign days, one of the things that distinguished him from John McCain in the discussion of health care was that, oh, no, they were not ever going to support in any way the taxation of benefits. And I think the American people are smart enough to figure out that just because you don't put a direct tax through their payroll on their benefits doesn't mean taxing them later on down the road on their income tax filings isn't a taxation on exactly the same thing. So I think that the specifics of Senator Baucus's plan would make people very unhappy, you know, if they look at their own financial situation. And employers who have been providing benefits for employees and believing that that was something of value that they were able to provide their employees are also, I don't think, going to be overly happy with finding out that they're going to pay taxes as well on those benefits. It's not a good thing.
What about, does it include the provision that if you don't buy health insurance,
you get penalized. Absolutely, it does. Absolutely, it does. Which, you know, you think about these things, what a terrible thing to do. You know, that if we have a family who, and I think what it makes me so angry about this particular plan is that any plan that bases your ability to get health care on the basis of how much you can afford to buy inherently will discriminate against women and against people of color, because until we have income parity in this nation for all people, we will not be able to provide health care to everyone at the same level if it's based on your ability to pay for it. So let's take a family that will earn just a little bit more than what the government says they would subsidize the purchase of private insurance for. So a working family earning a little bit more but not enough to buy the best of insurance benefits, that family will necessarily have to buy a policy if they don't want to pay a huge penalty.
Right.
They'll have to buy a policy that provides less coverage for their family. And it's a terrible, gross way to handle what we thought this president said was a basic human right.
Well, also, you know, not only that, but like you said, if they can't afford to buy health insurance, how are they going to be able to afford, you know, to pay this penalty at the end of the year for not having health insurance. And it is a boon to the health insurance companies are going to get 50 million more customers. So
Absolutely. Even if
everybody bought a policy for a dollar, that's 50 million more dollars.
Absolutely. Dennis Kucinich was holding a hearing today in Washington in which the panel was made up of health care insurance executives, and I think folks could probably go watch some of it even replayed on the Government Reform Committee website, Domestic Policy. But what was fascinating is to a person, the health insurance executive says, oh, we support reform that requires a mandate. And I thought, I'll bet you do.
Yeah.
I'll bet you do.
They report
subsidizing the purchase for low-income people. And again, I thought, I'll bet you do.
I support a bill that tells everybody to send me a dollar.
Yeah.
I support
too.
That bill 100%. Of course.
I want it to be the Cindy Sheehan and Donna Smith bill.
Yeah, I think. I'll split it with you, Donna.
We'll get
it 50-50. So this, to me, this whole debate has been just crazy, and I think it's been designed to be confusing, and I think it's been designed to be, purposefully miseducating people. I really believe, because I'm just cynical, because after all the time I've worked in Congress running against Nancy Pelosi, that the Democrats did not want to give us a single-payer health care for sure, but they didn't want to give us a healthy, robust public option like, you know, they talked about. I think that the right-wingers played right into their hands into the Democrats' hands by disrupting the health care town hall meetings that they did. But I have an example. Last week I was in Kentucky, and I spoke at a lesser economically advantaged community college where it was a wide range of races. It was a wide range of ethnicities and income levels, mostly lower-income people, a wide range of ages because it was a community college, you know, mm-hmm. from the traditional age to people who are older than me. And to a person, they all got these issues, that the government and health insurance companies are conspiring against us to offer us anything that's going to help us. Then a few days later, I went to an upper-income college that had less of it was mostly white, middle and upper-class students. Mm-hmm. And one student raised his hands and actually told me, Cindy, we have the best health care system in the world. And I said, well, yeah, we have the best health care system of everybody who is 38 and below us, because we're number 37 by the World Health Organization. But not only that, we have a great system if you're rich.
Yep, absolutely. It's so very true.
You know, so I think that it is just, that the whole thing from the media to these, healthcare town hall meetings, and then we see Nancy Pelosi, who last week gave up, all pretense to a public option, and the very next day, United Health sent out invitations for a fundraising party for her.
Absolutely. Next week it's taking place. Next week it's very frustrating for all of us to watch this play out, and very, very difficult to watch the scenario for the American public, who I think partly elected this president and overwhelmingly gave him a majority in his Congress specifically to address some issues that we all felt very strongly about. And, you know, you saw this great wave of hope that came to Washington in January, and with this wonderful, opportunity to have some social justice and to have us move in a direction of peace and move in a direction of being better to one another than has been happening in the last several years. And I think it's very upsetting for people to watch what's transpiring. I know it can be discouraging, it can be frustrating, and I know that those of us who are fighting here in Washington to make sure that there's some level of accountability to the American people, it's very difficult. It's very hard to break through this.
You're listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. My guest is Donna Smith, who is a healthcare advocate for us, not for the insurance companies, but for the people who don't have insurance, the people who are underinsured. But like Donna, also, your story is that, and you appeared in Michael Moore's movie Sicko, but your story is that you and your husband were covered very well with insurance, weren't you?
Absolutely. We had not only had health insurance, always had health insurance. We had a disability insurance policy and a health care savings account at the same time, all wiped out in a relatively short amount of time by health care crisis. And it can happen to anyone. I always tell people, you know, sometimes we hear those words and we know it, but we don't really internalize the reality that for any of us, you may work a lifetime to have just a moderate amount of success. We were not wealthy people by any stretch, but we had worked very hard to have what we did have and to do what we thought was responsible in our lives, and all wiped out in a matter of moments. I talked today on NPR a little bit about the fact that it's a terrible thing we do to sick people in this country, that anybody who ends up bankrupt because of medical debt, that bankruptcy follows you forever. It's not just a 7 years and it's off your credit record. We have very long memories about those kinds of things in our country, and we judge very harshly when we hear that word bankrupt. We look it down on those people, and it's a very cruel thing to do to people. And when I speak, and I know you see this too, Cindy, when you're out speaking around the country, we're better people than this. We are better people than what we're seeing displayed right at the moment.
Well, and I told the young man who was telling me about how we have the best healthcare system in the world. And I said, yes, you know, if you're wealthy, if you're fortunate enough to have health insurance, then probably that's the truth. Maybe that's the truth, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're the 50 million, almost 50 million Americans who are uninsured or underinsured, then you have the worst. He gave me an example of somebody who went in for a minor thing in Canada and then ended up a double amputee. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I said, you know, we have, for every example you're going to give me of Canada, I can give you 100 examples of something like that happening in America. What about the woman who bled to death in Martin Luther King Hospital in Los Angeles in the emergency room? And people were calling saying, you know, there's a lady here that is bleeding to death. What about 26,000 Americans a year die because they don't have access to good quality health care and they don't have health insurance? In a country like this, how can that be morally right?
It's not morally right, and we know it. And, you know, PNHP, the Physicians for a National Health Program, released new figures today about the deaths that are attributable just to lack of insurance in this country. The number has now been revised upward to 44,000 people a year.
Wow.
44,000 people in our country die.
Wow.
Now, that is just, it's tragedy beyond belief as far as I'm concerned, because it's not just grandmas who were very definitely snuffed out by insurance company death panels that decide not to provide treatment, not to approve treatment for patients, but it's children, it's teenagers, it's moms, dads, it's people at every age level who have insurance companies that make very definite decisions about who will be allowed to get treatment and who will not be. And 44,000 people a year, that is so tragic. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's a jump of almost 20,000 since I read the statistic.
Yeah, just today. The study was just released today.
We have a horrible infant mortality rate in America, but I assume the higher your income is, the lower the infant mortality rate is.
Absolutely. Obviously, you know, those people who can, you know, we have this system where we, you know, we can develop all these marvelous technologies and all these marvelous treatments and so forth, but only the wealthiest of the wealthy can actually afford to access them if they need them. You know, the people who are either insured or in lower income levels, they have to either appeal through an insurance company and hope that they've, you know, are able to get approved for whatever that treatment might be, or they probably won't get it. I've had many, many physicians tell me that it's just flat reality,
mm-hmm.
that the treatment that you get is based more so on whether or not you have insurance and what kind of insurance than we ever even know. It's a terrible thing. I know the last time I was in the hospital Even I wore a wrist bracelet that had barcoding on it. Now, part of that is so that they can barcode and make sure that they charge your record appropriately for drugs and so forth. But I thought, oh, my God. Now, you know, they can, and it also indicated what my insurance was right on my armband. And I thought, wow, used to say your name, your date of birth, your doctor's name, and your religious affiliation, if you had any.
Now
we have your name, the name of your insurance carrier, and a barcode.
And like you're a sausage or something.
Exactly.
My son was just in the hospital in May. And
I saw that.
Yeah, he was in for 11 days. He was in intensive care for 6 days. Mm. And every second he was in that hospital, I thanked the universe that he belongs to a union and he has good health insurance, because his
Absolutely.
Bill came to over $600,000. And his copay was about $400. And I like to remind my children, if you know they have, if they're fortunate like that, I said, if that happened to your mom, Andy, I would be dead.
Yep.
Because I don't have health insurance. And then we look over his bill and things he was double billed for. He was billed for things that didn't happen.
Wow.
Well, he wasn't billed. His insurance company was billed, right?
Yeah.
And so if you go over the line item, there's tests that they double billed on, or that they didn't even give him medication that he wasn't given and things like that. So, I mean, there's a big problem in this country that I don't think can be addressed with reform. I think our system has to be overthrown.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the problem. You know, another exciting piece of news this week, the AFL-CIO at their national convention passed a resolution supporting single payer, which is a huge thing for the national AFL-CIO, you know, to say that we believe the way working people in this country are going to get to health care justice is through a single-payer system. You know, the problems that you're outlining on hospital bills, they're not new ones, and they are adding to the costs and the problems that we face in the whole health care system. But the best possible way for us to starting to get a better handle on all those things is have a system whereby we can do that. We can provide all of our citizens access to care, but we also can flush out those situations that are obviously abusive and begin to address them and start pulling the cost down in a number of ways. So I like to tell people, even if you could remove the ethical and moral considerations from this, if you were able to do that, and you just look strictly at the economic issues for the nation and the financial issues, the single-payer system is still the better way to go.
Well, and I'm sure the AFL-CIO endorses it for the workers, but, you know, look at General Motors. General Motors can't be competitive. General Motors is the largest provider of health insurance in the world, I believe.
Yep.
And so if they were building cars, and I would hope that, you know, I don't endorse building cars unless they're electric. I endorse, you know, public transportation systems, and General Motors could certainly build those. But if we had a single-payer health system in America, they would be able to compete on a world market with their product.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're competing they're competing with countries who provide, automakers and countries where the countries provide the health insurance and the companies don't have to.
Absolutely. And I think we see this. This happens in every segment of the economy. The Cal Nurses did this wonderful study, an econometric study of 26 different areas of our economy and how those areas would be impacted if we passed a single Medicare for All, essentially, program. And in all 26 of those areas, economic activity would be stronger and better. There would be a net job creation of 2.6 million jobs,
right,
even after you factored in moving away from a private insurance-based system. So, I mean, there are so many reasons to do this that it becomes so abundantly clear, if it wasn't already, to all of us, that the reasons to not do this have everything to do with people who are being paid, and I mean our congressional members and our executive branch being paid an awful lot of money in campaign contributions to do it another way.
Well, absolutely.
It's very frustrating.
And it's not just in the health care field or bills to improve health care quality and access to to Americans, it's almost in every aspect. It's Wall Street, the bankers, the military-industrial complex. The corporations have a stranglehold on our government for sure, and I really thank you, Donna, for trying to break that part of the stranglehold in the health insurance business. But where can my listeners get more information about you, read what you write? You're a great writer.
Thank you, Cindy. So are you. I publish an awful lot on Common Dreams.
Uh-huh.
I do a little bit still on Michael Moore's website. And by the way, I just saw his new movie in Pittsburgh the other night, and it is fantastic. So
those
of you who get a chance, Capitalism, a Love Story, it's called.
Uh-huh.
So it's wonderful. You can also go to the guaranteedhealthcare.org website to read more about not only what I write, but what other people in the California Nurses Association write, and see more patient stories, more information on single payer, more information on the fight in our Congress right at the moment. And, you know, there's a lot of places you can go now for information on single payer. It's getting stronger. It's getting better. But we have to get louder for this government to hear us. And Cindy, you are such an advocate for the people of this country, and I so appreciate all the work and effort that you put in. It's going to take every one of us fighting really hard to make this happen.
Well, thank you, Donna, and thanks for the work you do. And we will thanks for coming back on, because, like I said, there's so much misinformation coming from all sides in this debate that it's nice to have a clear thinker and somebody like you that can explain what's really going on. So thanks for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again. I hope we'll be able to talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Cindy.
Thank you.
Bye.
That was my guest, Donna Smith. I hope you learned something. I know I did. Stay tuned to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. When we come back, we'll be hearing the audio version of our International People's Declaration of Peace. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet. Those who send their children off to die in robber class wars. Those who lack proper health care. Those who are denied decent education. And those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah.
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. F*** them. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a f***ing thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, in fact, did not even leave the house on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is, when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much.
Cindy Sheehan's new booklet, Myth America, examines two distinct groups of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose their jobs and homes and become homeless. Myth America exposes America's robber class, which controls our government, and affirms that we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. To obtain a copy of Myth America and learn how we can take back our country, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Well, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox is going to go on the move, and we're going to take the International People's Declaration of Peace, or what we like to call the IPDOP, around the world to rally a grassroots movement for peace. It's my contention that peace isn't going to come by asking the war profiteers, the robber class, our governments to stop wars. We have to join together to resist being used as tools by our governments. So that's why I wrote the International People's Declaration of Peace in collaboration with people all over the world who gave me input on the final version. So we'll hear it now, but before we hear it, we have commitments for 12 languages for it to be translated into. But we need Chinese, Bengali, Italian, and Korean. So if any of you can translate from English to any of these languages, please get a hold of me at cindyssoapbox@gmail.com. That's Cindy's, C-I-N-D-Y-S, soapbox@gmail.com. So here's the IPDOP, and we're very proud of it.
International People's Declaration of Peace. Preamble. We, the undersigned, as responsible citizens of this planet, hereby proclaim the urgent universal need for sustained security through peace, for present and future generations of the human family. In order that we all may live and prosper in dignity, we acknowledge the need for a genuine worldwide commitment by all people to break the dehumanizing chains of the savageries of militarism, of economic exploitation, of slaveries, of torture, of killing, and of all aspects of the culture of war and brutality that compromise the very survival of civilization on this planet. We proclaim that the present geopolitical economic social system is fundamentally incapable of delivering us from the merchants of war and exploitation and is completely devoid of offering positive, alternative solutions. Thus we come together as brothers and sisters to strive for peace and our collective freedom from violence and other oppressions. Declaration. We, the undersigned as responsible citizens of this planet, do declare, first and foremost, the intrinsic value of each and every human being, is equal, regardless of, race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, marital status, age, or national origin. Even though we are individuals with both unique talents and needs, we are also united in the community of humanity. Enslavement to the establishment by military service is never an option, whether it is for economic reasons or patriotic fervor. We will actively resist for ourselves and or for our children, as far as humanly possible, enlistment or forcible conscription into the armed services of our nations. The root of all war is profit, and we will not allow the war profiteers to own our labor or steal the fruits of that labor to be used solely for their greed of power and money. The insidious and uninterrupted preparations for war, along with the acts of war, are major environmental destroyers of this planet. In contrast, we will do all we are able within our families and communities to protect all life, conserve natural resources and, as far as possible, utilize sustainable and renewable forms of energy. We will boycott news sources that promote war, division and or oppression. We will not buy into the culture of violence that is promoted by movies, video games, television programming, music, toys or other popular culture. We will boycott products and or services from companies that profit from war and or companies that support nations that make war on others. We will remove ourselves as far as ideologically possible from our governments when unjust war is proposed, propagated, or conceived of in any other way. We will actively and courageously protest against wars, violence and economic oppression, no matter who, or what, rule our nations. We will proclaim to our nations, families, friends, co-workers, neighbors and others that using violence to solve problems is a disordered and barbaric choice. Except for legitimate and justified self-defense as a last resort, we refuse to use violence in our own lives and will explore with our children and communities many approaches to peaceful conflict resolution. Conclusion. War is the unspeakably evil pursuit of the establishment of this planet. Wars of aggression are inherently war crimes and crimes against humanity. We, the people of the world, suffer while the establishment grows wealthy from our sweat and blood. As a first step to breaking the cruel bonds that most governments hold over us, we firmly declare that peace is the moral imperative and we reject violence in all forms, from personal to state-sanctioned violence. Since most wars are not the will of the people and are brought on by the will of governments, at the behest of war profiteers, we firmly and with the highest conviction state that we are not enemies to each other and we will stand in solidarity to declare peace with the entire planet. We, the undersigned of this declaration of peace, agree to help each other break those bonds of violence and oppression and affirm our resolve to never again raise a clenched fist of violence against one another. Instead, we will join hands to lead this planet on the path of reconciliation, healing and peace.
That was the International People's Declaration of Peace, or IPDOT for short. My Ask Cindy question today comes from Beau Filter. He says, Dear Cindy, your Declaration of Peace is very well done. Here's my suggestion of an action to attach to the declaration. At noon on June 1st, 2010, people around the world will block the entrances of every military base on the planet. People on the bases will be allowed out of the gates, but no one will be allowed to enter. As noon enters each time zone, we will be witnessing a global tsunami of peace, softly blanketing the globe, to be completed in just 24 hours. By closing them all down simultaneously, none dare cry preferential treatment, and most of all, we will end in one act the military nightmare that has plagued this planet for the last 6,500 years. Military personnel could be rehired to help work on the most pressing health and environmental concerns of each respective region. Contact your local friends and prepare to end war. Your participation offers posterity the ultimate gesture of care and respect and hope for their future. Your global declaration needs a global action to back it up. With great respect for your peace work, Beau Filter. Well, Beau, I agree with you that we do need actions like this, militant actions, committed actions to end the robber class wars for empire, wars for profit. I think that this is a great idea. Like I responded to Beau, he needs to organize it. We need to start passing it around the world to peace communities all over the world to do this action. Now, I'm not sure if we just close down bases for 24 hours, if that will actually end war and militarism, or, retool the military-industrial complex companies and war profiteering industries into peacetime industries. But I think it will be a powerful action. And I'll sign up for it. I'll do it whatever time zone I'm in at noon on June 1st, 2010. But we need to truly have an organization to get behind it and to spread it around. So thanks for writing, Beau. And your soapbox action today is to go to courage2resist.org. Now, I know we didn't talk too much about militarism today except for the International People's Declaration of Peace and how we should all resist being used as really weapons of mass destruction against each other. But with what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and the increasing militarization and surge of troops and surge of violence in those regions, I think that not only should we not enlist into the military, but the people in the military should put their collective boots down and say, no, we're not going. We refuse to be used by the empire to kill other people, to fight their wars, and to ultimately make profits for the war machine. So please go to courage2resist.org. If you know a soldier, pass the information on. And if you can, throw them a few bucks because they really help people who are standing up with their moral centers and saying, no, we won't go, we refuse to go. The easiest thing to do, though, is not to enlist. And I know that's hard these days, when we have unemployment reaching the level of 20%, when college is so expensive, but being abused and betrayed by your government this way is not an option either. Well, that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. Thanks for listening, as always. Next week, we're going to have a very exciting show. I will be reporting from the G20 in Pittsburgh, but my special guest will be a man who I honor and whom I respect with all my heart, Howard Zinn. So tune in next week to the show. That's 3 p.m. Dallas time, 2 p.m. Pacific time at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. So this is your host, Cindy Sheehan. I'd like to thank, as always, Scott Cuddy, my engineer, Rich Bowser, my webmaster, Mikey, my assistant producer, Donna Smith for being our guest today, and as always, you for listening.
I must make my witness. Thank you. have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.